Гласните лавиринти на македонската радио телевизија.
Hello, this is a show from radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
Pins is a game compiled from a stack of photocopies and various ephemera. Pins is a dream document just for you. Pins gently reminds you that there are other worlds available. Are you comfortable? Grab pen and paper and 2 tablespoons and let's begin.
London, Paris, Accrington.
Manoeuvring and other matters. We are still out on manoeuvres as it's summer. As you should be too. So get out there and get some sun on your backs. Not moping around inside. That's for crybabies who never get healthy and die early. In fact, all players of pins should be out on manoeuvres, even if it is only a trip to the backfields where you once found the dirty magazines and where you once almost died when that golf ball hit you. And who carved the giant capitals ACDC into the field anyway? Here then are some manoeuvres to do. Where are we going? I look out of the back window of the tatty old Vauxhall and worry. The large gas towers hove into view. We're going past the industrial estate soon. We're leaving your mum for a bit. We're going on a secret journey. The answer, even if it is a joke, does nothing to ease my anxiety. I don't like secrets, and I don't want adventure. It's only been a couple of years since I was in the big hospital, and I never thought I'd leave. Going away in the car, or being left in a car, is not what I want at all. After a while, I just gave up. All the efforts of walking into town and back every day, what was the point? Hey, lass, if pots and pans were if and ands, you and your worrying. We can go to the church off Askell's Street, but that's high Anglican. They wave incest around and it's nearly Catholic. We'll get some chips at York Street on the way back if you're quiet. Not going up Devonshire Drive, nor down Clayton Village. Rougher's houses, knives on sticks, and they smelled bad down there. 1994, the day following, March 28th. There was very heavy snowfall, followed by a severe frost on March 29th. New feature at Catforth Gardens. Waterfall being built. Began clean up at side of house. Used buddleia canes on stakes for peonies. Repositioned tubs of peach, holly, mumbrisia and sedum. Bought 3 concrete tubs as seconds, £12, from Brierland Gardens, Briarfield. A new happy hunting ground for statuary, Ect. Plus 1 headless statue for £5, which I intend to place behind the apple tree to give the fright to next door. Must move Japanese anemone. I don't know, they mean well, but it's not the same without him being here. It was a nice little dance on the boat, songs with melodies and with the bingo. No young music, that's all thuds and thumps, and I can't be doing with it. Silly bunkum. For dopes, that's what it's for. And I hope the boys don't grow into that kind of music, it's horrible. We can just sit still and hold hands to take our minds off the boat rocking. It's the first time abroad for the boys, in Norway too. It won't be the same, it never is. But it'll be nice to see the gang in Telemark after all these years. The first time was over 20 years ago with the girls. After reading a young traveller's guide to Norway. No poor do's they over there. I haven't got the gumption for picking berries. They go crackers for berries in the summer. Norwegians are a bit crackers anyway. But the jam is lovely. Like we had it when I was a little girl. ...1996. Two euphorbias, York Gate, Leeds. Small golden-leafed hosta, Cleverly Mill, Gorton near Garstang. Cecerium striata, Flomus italica, Maghull. Parsley-leaved blackberry, Cram cordifolia, Beacon House Hill, Ilkley. White willow herb, Corsican hellebore, Bergenia, Purple primula, Highfield House, Ilkley. 1997. Buxus sempervirens, Ling Beaches, Leeds. Digitalis mertinosis, Old Slanningford Hall, Ripon.
Leaf Mould, up Trap Lane, Sabden Way. Now that's an ancient route, that. Probably late Neolithic.
We sit in contented silence in the fusty sitting room. A clock ticks. We look up. It's 7:30 on a summer evening. The rain quietly runs in rivulets down the large bay windows. They're steaming up. Glass cabinets full of porcelain and pot animals occupy each alcove of the room. One cabinet is almost entirely devoted to Shire horse figurines. We have, according to our age, been offered a can of local cider or pop, a small glass to accompany each drink, and a plate of biscuits. The television has its plug out. We are on holiday in a part of rural southern England we don't know and have no family in. This is another country. So this is what we have to do for now in this strange world. We can sit together. That's nice. We could even play whist for buttons later on. The cards are in the glove box.
We can take a ride to North Shields on the metro if you like, or go to Gateshead Stadium.
Living up past intact now. No one outside of this diary knows where I am. Oh, thank goodness the men had their own pubs up there. Oh, the noise. They could all bugger off there, away from us, so we could get some peace. All that high-pitched screeching. I'm glad we couldn't go in. It was awful. It's early 1999. We take Julian Cope's Modern Antiquarian book out on the road and check loads of local stone circles, henges and other Neolithic sites. Right round the North Midlands of England. Northumberland, Cumberland, the East Riding, Derbyshire, you name it. While I was messing about trying to find the bloody stones or waffling on about some historical point, he would find the absurd or weird in the smaller situation. One that sticks in my mind was when he pulled me to one side in Penrith and said, "Listen to me, there's no pigeons in Penrith." We'd only been there about 10 minutes, but he was right. Despite a chippy doing a roaring trade, there were no pigeons at all. None. And we didn't see one for hours. It still makes me think. We went to Ostrich World, where he pointed out to a bunch of visiting school children a boar pig having a ginormous shit whilst it was lying down. His timing was impeccable in these situations. "Watch this, children," he said, as they hove into view. How the hell did he stage manage that? This is the second option for the story at the Wick.
Form surrounded Newcastle back after the war. You didn't have to go far for fresh grub then. We're going down to the new city farm for your granddad's sake. No arguing. He's proud of the lads there. Ex-union. You could look at the pigs and have a bacon sandwich with real fat on after. Slab of pink meat, specks of charcoal on the flesh, and the rind a wee yellow bit between the black. Slapped into a stotty, smeared with marge. Proper that. And now, a word from our sponsors. And now, a word from our sponsors. In pins, it's important to know how to hide. We have seen there are many enemies about, especially those down the Con Club Whist Drive, the one by the Leeds Liverpool Bridge, down Clayton Bottoms, up Bash or Intac, or down Low Fell at the Greyhound, where you'd go golfing with the landlord's son. Not that any of you could golf or even tried, but you had a set of clubs, and it was a good way to waste an afternoon in a bit of countryside. He'd drive you out to Killingworth, and you could both get away from all that radged-up boozing stuff doing scratch cards in the bar. Botham's winners. Reg fucking Regal. When Tommy the Slipper won 23 pints from a card, his missus brought his dinner and his tea down from the lift, from his flat, on a tray, because there was no way he was getting back up and she'd not have him in the house. Stands to reason. And that's the Greyhound in Felling, not the one down Clayton at the junction going towards the tip where Norai was, because that's the one they laid out your great uncles and nephews when they were killed in the pit disaster. But the landlord doesn't let you swear in there, and Sam Smith's man makes you piss like an officer's horse. You'd hide away from the bay horse and the Portland in Felling, as they'd do you in there. No one sticks around in there either, for that long. The better bet is the Weed Chief, where you could hide with decent company, and Roger the Biker would turn up and talk about Alexander the Great. Do you like curved air? You can hide by getting your hair cut at Nutty Norman's in Clayton or George's down past the bridge near Felling Metro stop. Both charge £2 and you come out looking like you've joined up. No one knows who you are for a day. In the rule of pins, we are told that hiding means you have to first pinpoint target positions or places vulnerable to the enemy. Only then can you hide successfully. To do this, we need a gridded tabletop to determine enemy positions so that every time you move to occupy a grid, you can consult your site to see what happens, if anything. For that, you'll need a largish table gridded with 10-inch squares and two dice to find the target's centre. On reflection, perhaps this 8-inch squared table will be better. But write that down. But first, you better do the house stuff you've already written down. This is what you have to do for the rest of 1975. Don't lose the paper. Bathroom, ceiling, beading, carpet, lights. R's room, bed, cupboard, decorate. Main bed, decorate. E's room, bed, paint, bit of paper. Outside, shed, drive, garden. Otherwise, you'll never hear the end of it, what with Ivy coming round and running a finger over all the surfaces every day, and Charlie making eyes and laughing at you in silent commiseration as he puffs his pipe. I mean, I wish they wouldn't do that, running a finger looking for soot. But they all do, these lankies. Grace, Ivy, Marion and Lily, and Cousin Graham, and all that lot from Salford, and even Arthur. You'd have thought he'd be wise to that stuff, being a butcher and surviving the Libyan desert. And that scene last year at Christmas, when Ivy and me mam argued about who was sharing the ciggies. What What you can also do to hide is consult the maps I made for the Royal Lancashire Show at Great Harwood. Drew it out on Trace in Indian ink, 1 to 1,000 scale. Plenty of places there, like Ring, and in brackets, Light Horse, Horsebox Park, Collecting Ring A, or the Public Accumulation Area. Plenty of places to hide at a big do like that too. Look at when Michael D disappeared at the races for 2 whole hours and came back with 2 big Bratverse rolls in his jacket pockets. He was chewing on another, with all the sauce stuck in his beard. Dead giveaway, that. That yogurt and cheese-free diet can't be doing him any good if he needs to stuff himself on the quiet. You can hide the stone otter in the kitchen after the Mr. Fireworks incident. Half of Low Moor is after you. You can also wonder how she hid all that stuff about the war in Czechoslovakia and Bohemia for so long. How she avoided being poisoned as nanny to that family. Oh, she's so brazen, and she tells me things in German she'd never tell Derek. Terrible things. Talk about hiding gruesome secrets behind chintz curtains. She's so haughty, marrying a lump like Derek. Must have been a shock to her. But then, straight after the war, she could have been killed any old time, or lynched. I don't know why Derek was out there. RAF, I think. He probably didn't do much. Argo's down to look at Derek's stamp collection. Just think, a 10-year-old and a 56-year-old sitting there looking at boring stamps when she's in the background drinking coffee and laughing at his stupid hobby. Bet that collection must be worth a bomb. Like John and Ken's next door, that must be worth a packet too. But Ken sits in that outhouse twiddling his radio knobs and dials all day, trying to pick up shipping signals in the Irish Sea. They're all so pathetic, these older men, with their silly hobbies. Poor John, not being able to walk though. Bless him. What an awful thing. He's such a lovely lad. He got his hair braided as a Christmas present for his mum, so she could be proud of him. New beginnings. He can't hide his anger and frustration in any other way. He ended up in Germany and came back in 1946 and never said what he'd seen apart from, "It was terrible." You know, I think he once said he saw people burning during air raids. Your dad asked who he was when he came back. Didn't know his own father. Imagine being greeted like that. "There's a strange man, Mum. Who is it?" He's been busy with his politics and his choir ever since. "Do you want a bit dinner?" She had it chopped off. Breast cancer back then was a death sentence. But you'd never know looking at her. Paddy and Baths with the big white horse sign. Like a hillside chalk figure. Except it's not. Always gave me the creeps, that sign. There was that afternoon strip club just down the road from that sign in a pub's upstairs room in the late 1980s. One of our lot being attacked and given a re-wigging by the stripper. Part of the show, apparently. Had his head down towards t'other one's bits. A big fella too, expertly hidden. Things like that always happen to that lad. Remember when he fell down a hole in the middle of a field and no one knew where he'd gone? He ripped his ballsack open another time, climbing into his parents' kitchen window. Didn't want them to know that he'd been out.
No point saying anything. You know it's not yours, and all you'll get is people trying to do you down, and you're trying to help by driving them over to the clinic. But you can't hide from your enemies after the Norfolk Street Ragnarok. Oh no, that's because one of them's your landlord, and okay, this needs a long breath, and I'm not sure it's a good story for the wake, and certainly not for the funeral, but maybe for the buffet afterwards when the kids have gone home. Reet. Here goes the nose. After a long night of chewing the cud over the world's affairs in the establishments of Accrington and District, he found himself unwelcome at the house he was renting in Norfolk Street, due, I believe, to some romantic liaison between the landlord and a new beau. Unable to contemplate a return to the family's seat, he decided to pick the lock using a brick to smash through the middle glass pane. Somehow this act triggered the tiresome process of falling through the door and removing the whole door from its jamb, including the full glass pane during the descent. Undeterred by the screams of panic from within, he got to his bed and managed a good 30 seconds sleep before being evicted. He then went round to another house to crash out, where he was received and where, by most people's logic, this story should end. Quite what convinced him to trim his sideburns at 3 o'clock in the morning is anyone's guess. Such are the machinations of the human mind. Regardless, and to his chagrin, he found that hairdressing is a skilled profession and not one for the casual bohemian. Sideburns, and eventually most side and some back hair, had to be sacrificed in a late night attempt at follicular symmetry. Unfortunately, his nocturnal buzzings meant his host had to show him the door. All this I found out later. What I can say is that the following morning, in full innocence of the situation, I received a call from what I first thought to be a foreign agent. A gravelly voice said,
"I need you to come around now. Don't ask why. Just come."
After a minute, I realised who it was and set off for Norfolk Street. What greeted me was a scene out of a riot, a house with no door, and bricks, and a lot of glass and broken wood in the street. And a strange-looking friend, shorn of his luxurious sideburns and most of the hair on the side of his head. He looked like a convict on the run. We decided to get the door fixed. He measured the glass out, and I drove him down to the glass merchant down Clayton. All seemed fine. We picked up some cheap putty and got a glass cut. I left him to it. About 3 hours later, I received a second call.
"You won't believe it."
I went round to find him with a new haircut, straight out of Full Metal Jacket, both hands bandaged, and a new door. The putty we'd bought had glass in it, meaning deep gashes in his hands and a dashed away A&E. Plus, he hadn't measured the glass correctly, so the cut pane fell through the aperture. Somehow, he'd found time to sort his hair out, meaning a grim, steel helmet-fitting barnet, courtesy of his landlord who'd cut his losses at some point and bought a new door. I think that may be one of the last times he did any DIY. And he had to teach his class on Monday. So what do you reckon? Do you think that's going to be all right for the buffet reception? Stay tuned for more pins. Next time, we'll learn about rations and disobeying orders. Pins was brought to you by the curator of the Museum of Photocopies and Radio Worm. Recording and mastering was done with Lucas Simonis and Ashkel Martin at Radio Worm Studios and Worm Sound Studios, Rotterdam. The executive producer is Ashkel Martin. Musical interludes and voices are provided by the Pins Marching Band and Auxiliary Choir. The episode contained a selection of noises, voices and music donated for use in these broadcasts rights-free by the wider cast and compiled by the Museum of Photocopies.
Brandy, me.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm.